Welcome back to the Southwest Virginia Sports Podcast. My name is Ryan Dye. My co-host, as always, is Brady Hess. Are you keeping warm over there in Richlands, Brady?
Man, it's cold. They've called school off in Tazewell County for Wednesday, which means I will get to sleep in, so that is good. Nonetheless, it is cold. Christmas is almost here. We can start talking about it because Turkey Day has came and went, which I hope you and yours had a fantastic Thanksgiving, my man. But more football going on.
One of my favorite quotes of all time is a Brady quote that I can't say on this podcast about Christmas on the way back from a Virginia Tech Kentucky basketball game.
Yeah, that was a pretty good little quote there. Maybe we'll make T-shirts.
We should, and there were two or three quotes on that trip that were legendary that I'll always remember about my college years. But sadly, we can't say them on this podcast. Brady, well, we knew we were going to have some games this week, but we have more than what we thought we were going to have.
Yeah, we got quite a few teams playing, man, and it's really exciting to see some advance and survive. And what do we have? We have five teams, which is really awesome. So, nonetheless, we will have some more football to be covering this week and moving into the near future.
Well, let's get right to it. Let's start with the semifinals in West Virginia. Bluefield looking to get back to Wheeling for the second consecutive year, and they will be going back. They get past Bridgeport 35-14. Arnold Martin and Juice Edwards have a good day on the ground.
Yeah, they absolutely do. The Beavers do quite a bit, man. And when the rematch in the semifinals with the Bridgeport Indians, they pick up right where they did in 2017. Martin, 113 rushing yards and a touchdown. Juice got a touchdown. Chandler Cooper, the quarterback, with a rushing touchdown and a passing touchdown. But that was pretty spectacular by the offense. Isaiah Johnson, 53-yard interception return for a touchdown, showed why he can cut on the Jets and be the number one cornerback in the entire United States for the class of 2021. The defense played really great, Ryan, as well. That was led by Johnson and Sean Martin. They held Bridgeport's record-setting running back Jake Bowen in check all night long as they cruised to a 21-point victory.
And over on the Virginia side, we knew we would have a team representing the Coalfields in Salem, because in Class A we had four teams playing, and all of them were in our area. We'll start with Galax Narrows. Galax just comes out and says, "Well, we're just going to show you just how good we are." They outgained the Narrows Green Wave 430-41.
What a powerful statement sent by Mark Dixon and those guys, Ryan. Unreal performance. 55-0 there at home. Blake Brown, 112 yards. Vault, 83 yards. Pickett hit Ashworth five times for 106 yards. And some scoring going on, obviously. That's on the first half. The Maroon Tide just rolling, man. 304 yards to -7 on a rushing attack that featured Matthew Morgan. That was pretty dominant there in Narrows. Only a first down in the first snap for Narrows, and just won the rest of the day. So two first downs, a very dominating defensive performance there by Galax, and they will roll on to another pretty tough opponent this week.
Yeah, they're going to roll on, and they're going to face Chill Howie, because Chill Howie said anything Galax can do, they can do as well. Chill Howie beating Patrick Henry in a rematch 49-6. I had kind of thought this would be a game in which Chill Howie would win more than they did the first time, but this was just a absolute blowout.
I think this is a statement game for Chill Howie. This is one that they want to put all the doubters to bed over. This is unreal. What a game. They held Cody Smith and Zach Brown to very little. Those guys came into the game 3,468 yards combined, Ryan. Smith, 76 yards. Brown, 50 yards. Can you believe that? This Warriors defense is playing out of this world. It's very impressive. And the offense is clicking on all cylinders as well. Sanchez, 163 yards on 15 carries. Kale carried the ball 10 times for 83 yards, three rushing touchdowns, a passing touchdown. Anthony Blevin, 72 yards, 308 yards on the ground there for Chill Howie. And we talked about that dynamic backfield of Patrick Henry. They were limited to 13 first downs, 3.3 yards per carry. They didn't cross midfield, Ryan, until the second quarter. Their longest play of the day went for 27 yards. That is just a normal drive for the PH Rebels was a 27-yard pickup. But, man, Chilhowee really exerted their force and their dominance right there in that Hokahiki District matchup, which was actually the region title game.
Yeah, and Patrick Henry's lone score actually came on the final play of the game. That's why it's six. There was no need to kick the extra point. That game was obviously already over. Just a dominant performance by Chilhowee, a dominant performance by Galax. That game on Saturday is appointment viewing. If you don't have anything to do on Saturday, you need to get to Chilhowee. That game is going to be everything that you could ever imagine with the price of admission.
Man, if the Hokies weren't playing at noon, I would love to be at Chilhowee. That is going to be a knockdown drag out. But nonetheless, the good news for us is one of these teams will be moving on to Salem, and we will be there for sure for that one.
And over in the 2A ranks, let's start with the Region C. The three-time state champion Appomattox Raiders went into Radford. Technically, the game was played in Christiansburg. They went over there. Radford comes out on top 28-25. Down go the Raiders. Their first playoff loss since Lehigh beat them in 2014.
Man, this is a very impressive win by Radford, and I think the Roanoke Times did a very good job describing this as nerve-tingling. Appomattox was on their way to get a fourth state Class 2 state championship, but nonetheless, Radford, after going 2-8 a year ago, pulls a big upset. I'll call this an upset, even though Radford was the one seed, Ryan, because Appomattox has been the favorite since, a long, long time. I was a freshman in college, or a sophomore nonetheless, but I digress. And Radford, very impressive. Prelude, impressive. Justice Marshall's impressive. Zane Roop, those guys can flat out play. They will have a big contest against Graham, which we're going to talk about that game here in a second. I've seen some of these Radford coaches at the Richlands Graham game, seen Virginia Tech legend Pearson Prelue there. But nonetheless, Radford, big game. I know they didn't think about it very long, but they were very impressive in the win over Appomattox. Prelue had 117 yards rushing.
And finally, the game that you and I were at this week, Richlands tried to make a game of it, but a sequence of plays in the second quarter put this one really to a back-breaking end. Graham 38, Richlands 10. Graham is your Region D champion, and they will travel to Radford.
Cam Allen, what can you not do, young man? That man is an incredible football player. He can do it with his legs, his arms, his smarts. He can do whatever the heck you want him to do in any phase of the football game. Five touchdowns, Ryan, 265 yards total for the Purdue Boilermaker commit. He's really been impressive in the two times I've watched him. Nonetheless, but no less than spectacular, pardon me in my misspeaking. He can do it all. He made some plays out of nothing. There was a bad snap. There was a fumble at one play, and he just picked it up and he housed it. And that's pretty impressive no matter what level of football that you're on. But Ryan mentioned Richlands had a few breaks, could have been a lot closer. Trey Brown, 74 yards rushing for the Blues. Moyer generated over 230 total yards, even though he did miss a little bit with an injury. But Richlands was keeping it close. It was 7-3. Richlands throws a bomb to Taylor Horn that comes up just short, I believe, at the 3-yard line. And then all heck broke loose. Horn went down with an injury. The next play, there was an illegal man downfield on a touchdown pass that was called back. And then the next play, raced through an interception, and that let the air out of the Blue Tornadoes and got the storm down for maybe a F3 or an F4 to mild wind gusts that we've seen this week with the snow blowing around in the backyard. But nonetheless, Richlands falls. They finished the season at 8-5, I do believe, is the record there. Please correct me if I'm wrong. I know the paper right here that we have says 8-4, but I'm thinking it's 8-5. Am I wrong?
Yep, nope, it's 8-5.
Okay, 8-5. But nonetheless, good season by the Blues. But Ryan, Cam Allen is spectacular.
He really is. And like you mentioned there with that sequence, Richlands down 7-3. They score there. then they're up 10-7, and maybe Graham starts to panic a little bit and start to press a little bit harder, and who knows what happens. But as soon as that interception was thrown, the next play, Cam does his thing, 92 yards straight up the middle of the defense on the way to a touchdown. That made it 14-3. Really just broke the back. But man, the matchup we're going to have next week, Cam Allen versus PJ Prelew, that'll be worth the price of admission just by itself.
Yeah, for sure. Get out to Radford for that one. A lot of good football being played, but two really good prospects and maybe what will be two of the most highly touted recruits in the area in quite some time.
So that was your recap of the semifinals and regional finals, depending on what side of the state line you're on. We have a couple players of the week this week. Why don't you tell everybody who they are?
As no surprise to any of us, especially Ryan and myself, the offensive player of the week for round three of the playoffs goes to Graham's Cam Allen, making him the only player that so far this year to be the offensive player of the week and the defensive player of the week. That's pretty incredible there for the Purdue Boilermaker commit. And on defense, we're talking about Division I prospects. Let's go with Bluefield's Isaiah Johnson, who had a pick six, 50-plus yards to the house against Bridgeport. That young man is spectacular. He cuts on the wheels. And hopefully he will be putting on some maroon and orange in 3 years. I digress. Nonetheless, pretty impressive athlete there.
Absolutely. Those are too well-deserved there. Let's see here. You talked to a coach today. Why don't you tell everybody who you talked to?
Probably the biggest football guy in our area, Ryan. Mark Dixon from Galax. This is probably one of my favorite interviews I've ever done, not only with this podcast, but ever. Just so much football knowledge, so much life knowledge, just so incredibly intelligent. I love talking to him. It was probably the most enlightening interview we've done with this series, and I really look forward to it so much so, Ryan, that if they do sneak past Chill Howie, I'm going to get him back on next week as well, is how much I really enjoyed it. And he was very kind to give us some of his time in a big week leading up to this Chill Howie matchup. Mark Dixon, All-American at UVA, a starter in the NFL, state championship-winning coach. What hasn't he done? And apparently he's pretty good on the hardwood, too. But Mark Dixon, the man, the myth, the legend.
All right, so there you have it. There's Brady's beautiful intro here. Let's hear what Brady and Mark Dixon had to say on this week's Coach's Corner.
Guys, this is one coach's corner that I have been excited for since the beginning of the year. The Galax Maroon Tide have won 8 in a row and currently sit at 11-2 on the year. Their head man has been at the helm there in Galax for 9 seasons. He was an All-American at the University of Virginia before spending time in the NFL Europe, the CFL, and in the NFL with the Miami Dolphins. His team heads to Chill Howie on Saturday. We are happy to be joined by Galax head coach Mark Dixon. Coach, thanks for joining us this evening.
Thanks for having me. Glad to do it.
Coach, you are heading into your 6th state semifinal appearance in your tenure there in Galax. What has this season been like down there with the Maroon Tide?
It's been a little different than other seasons. We kind of started off fast, and we hit a really big lull in the middle of the year where we struggled some, and then we hit our stride again here at the end. So it's been a little more of a yo-yo ride this year than what's been typical.
And you talk about that yo-yo ride. What are some things that your team has done well during the season, and where would you like to see your team improve before the big game on Saturday?
Well, I think as the year progressed, I think offensively we got a lot more diverse, and then defensively we were able to add some different pressure packages. So I think that's been the big part of us kind of going on a little streak here. And then the frustrating part is we still struggle with some penalties and some offsides and things of those natures. That you certainly can't have against Chill Howie and expect to have any hope of being in the game.
Last week, you guys met Narrows for the 2nd consecutive season in the region title game. Last year, it was a 1-point game. This year, you guys shut them out 55-0. Just what went well for you guys on Saturday? It was Friday, but you guys played a pretty good football game over there.
Yeah, I think like any time I'm on both sides of those things when they get going the wrong way. And I think Nair's had an unfortunate break there. Their second possession, they fumbled the ball, and we had a scoop and score that put us up 14-0. And it's just one of those deals when you're on the road like they were and it kind of starts going the wrong way, kids start pressing. and they got out of hand on them. But I've certainly been on the other side of that when my kids did that. So I don't think it's indicative of how good Narrows is by any stretch.
Coach, let's talk about how you guys approach these games this year. In years past, you guys have been a run first, second, and third teams over the years. This year, you guys have aired it out some. Just what made you want to pursue an aerial attack?
First and foremost was personnel. I just thought we had personnel that allows us to throw the ball more than we had in years past. And then secondly, you know, just struggling late in the as we get into the season and we get to playing better and better teams and the people take away the run. That's how we've lost a lot of games, you know, these semifinals or late in the playoffs. And I just wanted it to be a little more diverse. And if we are going to lose, let's lose a different way, I guess, was kind of my mindset changing what we do schematically.
And you talk about that personnel. You have two really good quarterbacks. Gage Cook and Cole Pickett are both at 1,000 yards or over for the season. Just what makes the two-quarterback system work down there?
Yeah, it's been interesting. I would have never done it, but this year I was – planning on going the first five games and letting them both compete for the job. And then as the season wore on, it just both of them bring a different dimension. Both of them are comfortable in the role they're in, and both of them are okay with the other kid playing, which speaks to their character. And so we've just stayed with it. Both of them share equal reps in practice. Both of them know they're going to play in the game. I pretty much have rotated every two series the whole year. And they add both a different dimension. I don't know. It's kind of like any other position, I guess, the way I viewed it. After we got going, I sub in multiple defensive linemen, and now I'm doing it at the quarterback spot.
You talk about those other positions. Blake Brown and Caxton Vaught have had stellar seasons at tailback. What makes them the latest running backs to flourish in your system?
Both of them are super quick. They're different type runners. You know, we've been based such in a power running game for so many years that the other kids I've had were probably bigger and more physical. But these kids probably fit the spread system more. And they're really good in space. And so if you can get people out of the box and give them a little room to operate, they're better than just trying to pound it down people's throats. So I think their skill set is more conducive to what we're running now than if I would have tried to stay and run power and the I formation and all.
Let's flip sides of the football. The defense has been phenomenal this year. What can you say about Lee Peoples, Colby Barnes, and the gang over there on defense?
Yeah, I've been really proud of them. I think it's just an athletic defense, maybe one of the more athletic. I'd probably have to go back to 2011 defense. That's how long it's been since I think we've had that as much as we have on defense right now. And certainly Lee Peoples and Isaac Hawks and Jaron Greer and Andrew Belcher and Mason Williams are our D-line, but they all can fly. And they're strong enough at the point of attack, or they have been so far this year, that when you add them at D-line, you create team speed. We've always had pretty decent speed on the back end of things in the secondary, but to have linemen that can run the way they can run certainly makes it appear like you're playing with more than 11 at times.
Coach, we've talked about all the success you guys have had this season. There were two blemishes on the schedule there with the loss to Northside and Glenver. Just what was your message to the team after those two losses?
The same message I have every year in the first five games. We treat the first five games as preseason, and that's just the way we treat it. So I tell them I schedule them for a reason. We're going to find out what our weaknesses are, and we're going to address them. It goes back to my second year in coaching, 2011. We went to the state championship. We were 14-0 and had blown everybody out, but our schedule wasn't hard. And we had a ton of weaknesses I didn't know until we got to the state championship game and lost, and Clintwood exposed all those weaknesses. From that point on, I changed my thought on scheduling, and I wanted to schedule the five toughest teams I could find in the first five games, and I would live with being 0-5. Because in single A, you know, if you win – four or five games, you're going to make the playoffs. So my message is always the same. It's just, it doesn't matter. The first five games are irrelevant. It's just about getting better. So when we lose them, the kids don't react one way or another when we win or lose, because the kids understand that most of that's meaningless.
I really like that outlook, and I don't think I've ever thought about that until just now, but I really like the point there. Let's talk about this upcoming playoff game with Chilhowee. The second straight year that you guys have met in the state semis, what have you seen on tape, and what has preparation been like leading up to this battle against Greg Sanchez and the Chilhowee Warriors?
They're scary. They're nothing like they were last year in terms of they're so much better than they were last year. They're just at another level. I go back to, again, I hearken back to 2011 or 2010. East Montgomery had a team that reminds me of Chilhowee a little bit, and then Alta Vista. You know, and both those teams made it to the state championship, and Alta Vista won the state championship several times, and that's who they remind me of. They're just so athletic. They're so physical. They're so fast. They're well coached. There's nowhere out you can find to attack them. Their defense is phenomenal. And then, you know, you got Sanchez. The quarterback is phenomenal. And then you got an offensive line that's significantly better than they were the year before. So I don't know. I haven't slept much. I don't see any weaknesses anywhere.
It definitely is going to make for a good ball game on Saturday. Coach, we talked a little bit about the past here in the early part of this interview. You've had some pretty successful players come out of that program under your direction. Virginia Tech running back Stephen Peoples is a good friend of mine from when I was a student at Virginia Tech. Appalachian State's Caleb Sperling has done well during his time in Boone. What's it like to cut on the television and see these guys playing against some of the best talent in the country?
It's certainly special for me and my wife because we're really, really close to both of those kids. I knew it, both those kids, that was their dream from eighth grade. And as soon as I started talking to them, that's all they ever talked about. That's all they ever wanted to do was play college football. And so to see both of them live out their dream is, I don't know, I can't explain it, but I'm just thrilled for both of them. It blows my mind to see how far they've taken this thing from when I remember when they were in ninth grade. Just proud. I'm proud of who they are as people. I love the way they represent their school. I love the way they represent their families, how they carry themselves. And I hopefully that, you know, part of that journey was being at Galax and understanding what football is all about and what it's supposed to teach you. And that's how to be a gentleman, how to compete, but do it the right way and help the other guy up. And I see both those guys doing that. And that's what thrills me the most.
You know, as a Tech guy myself, in a lot of interviews, the few interviews with Steven, he always gets asked this question, so I'm going to ask you about it. What was that day against Graham like back in 2013 when he ran for 500-plus yards?
That was funny. It was weird because they kept driving the ball down the field on us, and they'd get down to like our 20 and stall out, and then we'd hand it to Steven, and he'd go 80. And they'd do it again over and over, so the game, it felt like it was really close. So at the end of the game, my wife said, Steven's got a record. And I didn't know how many yards. I didn't even know. I was clueless. I said, yeah. And I thought the record was 300 yards. I had no idea it was 500. I had no idea that's how much he had had. It was just an amazing performance. But it was one because the game was still back and forth for a long time. I had no idea. I just knew that it seemed like he had about 300 to me is what he thought. When she said 500, my eyes popped open. I just could not believe that was 500 yards.
Coach, let's talk a little bit about your journey to being the head coach at Galax. You played your high school football down in North Carolina. What was that experience like?
I was blessed to play for a really good coach who held in a really good district of football. You know, we played in the Greensboro, Jamestown area, so we're a big school, got to play against good competition, but I had a coach who just really understood the kind of day-to-day grind and taught me drills and helped me become a better player. But my thing was basketball. And so really what separated me and allowed me to get to college was basketball. Basketball created the ability to move and cover people in space and move my feet. And so those things are what I learned in high school that eventually got me to the NFL. So probably more important than my college experience was the experience of playing basketball in high school.
And you talk about just the experiences with basketball and football there. What was the recruiting process like for you leading up to ultimately committing to UVA?
Now, I was blessed. I had a really good football player that I played basketball with. So my sophomore year is when I got noticed. So I had my first scholarship offer was when I was a sophomore. And so from that point on, it just kind of – and then, you know, it was a bigger place that I played. And so recruiting back then was so different than it is now. Recruiting then was just a ton of phone calls, too many, all the time. There wasn't enough regulations. And then a bunch of mail all the time. So by the time I was a senior, I was over it. So I committed early to UVA. That's where I was born in Charlottesville and was always a big Ralph Sampson fan. And so I was always a huge UVA fan, so that's kind of why I went there. So the recruiting, to see how it's changed, I think some of the restrictions are definitely necessary.
And you mentioned that you were born in Charlottesville and you returned to UVA to play there from 1990 to 1993. You played with Tiki Barber, Mike Groh, Sean Moore, Terry Kirby, Herman Moore, amongst many other great players there at UVA. What were those years in Charlottesville like?
You know, it was a lot of fun. Certainly a tremendous amount of talent that was coming through UVA at that time. I think and when 1990, we were ranked number one in the country with Sean Moore, Herman Moore, and all those guys. And I think we had seven NFL linemen on that team. Now, some of us were young, but that just tells you the talent. And then we had Coach O'Brien, who was our O-line coach, and he was just sending people to the NFL left and right at that time. So just tremendous coaching, tremendous talent. We were really raiding the state of North Carolina, getting a ton of players out of North Carolina. And so it was kind of the heyday of Coach Welsh. And just there was a ton of talent coming through there at that time.
And you talk about that freshman year when you guys sat at number one in the country there for a little bit. What was the vibe around campus like during that time when the Hoos were on top of America?
Yeah, it was crazy. It was so exciting, and it kind of ended all so quickly. The place was buzzing, and it was Sports Illustrated, and everybody was around. And then when we had lost to Georgia Tech that next week, it was like everybody was gone. So we were riding high for a lot of weeks, and we had a phenomenal team, and we really did. I mean, it was just phenomenal. You think about Sean Moore and Herman Moore and what they had done that year and whatever they placed in the Heisman that year. Up until the seventh game, or whatever, up until we lost to Georgia Tech, we were scoring at an unbelievable clip. It seemed like it was in the end zone on average. I mean, we were just putting up tons of points.
And you mentioned Coach Welsh just a couple statements ago. Just what was it like to play for such a legend as Coach Welsh?
You know, I've been blessed in my life. I played for him. I played for Jimmy Johnson. And there couldn't be any more different in their personalities, and they couldn't be any more alike in their ability to manage time. Genius of both men is their ability to manage time. They can do more in their 24 hours with the people they're preparing than the people around them can. And Welsh, I learned so much about him because he's military about time management. He just understood how to run a practice and how to get the most out of 2 hours possible. He understood it. And then, I think about his motivation is so different than Coach Johnson, but both of them knew how to push buttons. And so they're so similar, and blessed to play for both of them. But Coach Welsh, probably I learned more about how to run an entire program following him. And I've modeled so much of what we do at Galax after Coach Welsh. A ton of what we do is based on what I learned from him.
And you talk about that college career. You cap it off being named a consensus All-American in '93. After that, you go undrafted. The Eagles sign you before they release you before the season starts. Just what's that time like for you? You know, you have this successful college career, then a few injuries kind of, I don't want to use the term derail, but what's that like for you? All this success and then, heck, you go undrafted and then you get cut. What's going through your mind?
Well, you know, it's interesting. I went to the NFL Combine and failed a physical when they did the medical on my neck and back. And I already had several back surgeries in college. And then when I went to the Eagles undrafted, I had a really good mini camp and came home and was lifting weights at my house in Nag's Head in the Outer Banks and ruptured another disc in my neck, which was probably maybe what they saw on that medical is what I've always thought. So I went to the one mini camp and I ruptured a disc in my neck at home. And of course, that wasn't covered, so I was cut. I mean, I couldn't play. So then I took about a year off and I dropped down to like 230 or 40 pounds. So football was done for me at that point. I just physically, you know, that was my fourth back surgery at that point. So I just didn't know I'd ever be able to do it again. And ironically, Sean Moore, who we were just talking about, was in the World League and they didn't have enough line. And they're having tryouts in Atlanta. And Sean said, well, I know a guy who might be willing to do it. He's a good player. And so Sean then got a hold of me. I said, well, I'll come down and try. I only weigh 240 pounds. So I went down the World League and made the team as a six or seven lineman at 240 pounds. Long story short, went over to Europe. eventually started there, got up to about 265, still way too small. Went to the Atlanta Falcons. I stayed there 2 weeks, but was still too small. The guy at the Atlanta Falcons, June Jones, God bless him, when he cut me, he called me into his office. He said, "You're just too small to play in the NFL." He said, "But you're a good pass blocker." And June's actually was connected with the CFL. And at the time the CFL was in the United States, it was in Baltimore. He said, "I got a good friend, Coach Matthews. You ought to go up there if you still want to play football. I'll make a call and get you there." So he made the call, sent me to Baltimore. I played 1 year with the Baltimore Stallions. And the very next year, they moved up to Canada. So by the time I got up to Canada and played 2 years up there, I put all my weight back on. I was probably 295. And that's when the Dolphins called, and I went down there. And then, of course, you know, I was there 6 years. And so that was kind of the deal. That's kind of how it all unfolded.
Well, let's talk about that time with the Dolphins. You signed with them in 1998. You were there until 2003. You started 60 of the 62 games you were on the team. What was that time like down there in Miami?
It was a great experience. It was a great experience. I went down there, and, you know, the beginning of camp, I was the third or fourth team left guard, and just as luck, I shouldn't say luck, a lot of things had to fall on the right, and some, you know, kids got banged up, some kids showed up out of shape, and all those kind of things happened in the NFL, and I went from fourth team to second team, played well in the first scrimmage, and then I walked in. I only had about three or four practices before we scrimmaged. I walked in, and he met me at the door, and he said, "You're the new starting left guard for the Miami Dolphins until you lose it." And until you lose the position, and I never lost it. You know, I had injuries and eventually couldn't play anymore, but he was a man of his word. He kept me there, and I stayed there and played well for him.
And we talked about it a lot earlier, but there in Miami, what is it like to play for one of the legends of the game of football in Jimmy Johnson?
I love him. Think the world of him. He was wonderful to me and my family. Coach Johnson's a guy that if you shut your mouth, you show up on time, you're early, you know your playbook, and you don't jump off sides on fourth down, you're a hard man to cut. He really looks for those type of guys, and he's loyal to that. So I try to do those things for him, and he was very, very good to me and didn't have to be. And gave me a new contract before he even had to. Just a good man, a good man. He's exactly what you think he'd be when you see him on TV. He's got unbelievable charisma, got personality for days, but he's also very loyal. And that's why all his players will run through a wall for him.
You played with Dan Marino in Miami, Zach Thomas, Ricky Williams, Chris Carter, amongst many other talented players. When I say some of those names, what comes to your mind?
Well, you know, it's interesting. Each one of them, I have a different relationship with each one of them. And, you know, I think about when I hear their name, I just think about my relationship that I had with each one of them. Like, I love Chris. Me and him hung out and probably more than some of the other ones. He tripped me out, thought he was hilarious. Loved Dan. Dan had a great personality. Loved talk about high school sports. Loved to say he could strike you out or he could beat you in basketball. You know, those are the things I remember. Well, Zach Thomas was one of my big buddies down there. Me and him, go to watch Florida play basketball and go do different things. So, and me and Zach play basketball all the time. So just how competitive he is. So each one of them, I take something about my relationship with them. And it makes me smile. We had a wonderful time there.
You became the head coach at Galax in 2010. What brought you to Galax, and why was it the right time for you to become a head football coach?
My two daughters, I was divorced, and my two daughters moved into Galax, and I'm from Jamestown, and so, I thought it was good to get out of Florida. I was ready to leave Florida, so the move was good for me because it was back kind of where I grew up. And then I wasn't really going to get involved with Galax athletics at all. I was actually getting my master's in clinical psychology and was just kind of working out and training in the weight room and met some guys, and they said, "Would you like to help the high school?" So I actually went up there and helped a little bit with football, but I was still getting my master's at that time. I graduated and I did JV basketball. And when I did JV basketball, I just fell in love with the kids I was working with. And so those kids and that experience made me think about coaching. That's kind of how it all started.
What was the challenge of rebuilding a program that had not been to the playoffs since 2002 when you took over?
I was just super blessed. Probably one of the greatest classes that ever came through that happened to be here at the time I got here. Those kids were so talented. What they needed was to understand the fundamentals and the day-in, day-out work ethic it took to achieve something. They had all the tools and skills. I mean, they were loaded. The basketball team was loaded. The basketball team had been successful, and all those kids were football players. So it was just a matter of getting them to get focused and disciplined on the day-in, day-out details of being successful. And that class made it really easy because we were so successful so fast that everybody bought into what we were doing. So immediately with the first football team, they were so talented and we were winning that, you know, the community and the administration, everybody bought into, wait a minute, this is different. This is something different. And so I think that first class, I was just blessed and lucky that that was my first class when I got here. So it wasn't a lot of rebuilding, to be honest. It was more directing. I mean, I knew we had talent. It was just getting it directed and focused, all singleness of purpose, all pulling together the same way.
And you pulled it all together in the same way that you win a state championship in year six in 2015. What was that day like in Salem?
It was, you know, in some ways you talk, it reminds me a little bit about when I made it to the NFL. And I say that for this reason. When I made it into the NFL and made the team, it was kind of vindication for, you know, just proving that, wait a minute, that I was a good football player, right? So when we won the state championship, it was kind of not me, but our kids had vindicated the 2011 team that had lost the state championship. So I felt like that team was the team that made it okay for what happened in 2011 for those kids. Because I think the 2011 team, this is what I felt that day, knew that state championship would have never happened without them. And so that's why I was so proud for 2011 when we won it. Ironically, that was the team that popped in my mind.
Coach, two more and I'm going to get you out of here. What is the key to success down there in Galax?
Strength and conditioning program. I think that's by far, in a way, the most important thing we do here that at least allows us to be consistent year in, year out, year in, year out, and be competitive. I think that's the number one thing. And I think the second thing is what I talked about originally. We don't ever – it's just the day-to-day grind. My kids don't get up and they don't get down. We seek revenge on nobody. We don't talk about last year or 2 years ago or 3 years ago. My kids are really good at focusing on today. Of being good today. And so that's why I don't think we've had as many ups and downs, because when my kids lose, they don't react like you would think a teenager is going to react. They take it in stride. There's no finger pointing. It's just part of the process. And so I think those two things, strength and conditioning and recognizing that every game, every practice is just part of a journey. And they're really good at understanding that.
Last one here for you, Coach, and I ask everybody this in closing. As somebody, specifically yourself, who has been around football your entire life, you've been familiar with a lot of different cultures, whether it's there in North Carolina or whether it's in Charlottesville at UVA, whether it's in Europe, Canada, or in Miami. You've been around a lot of different cultures, and even there in Galax. Football is very important to the people in Southwest Virginia. Just what makes football in our region so special?
I think it represents one of the last bastions that you have to delay gratification. You have to put in a tremendous amount of work. And I think that's what Southwest Virginia people have done historically, right? You got the coal mines, you've got the factories, you've got people that have grown up around a lot of hard work. And I think football represents that for them. I think it also represents a place where things are broken down, right? Religion doesn't matter. Race doesn't matter. Socioeconomic status doesn't matter. At the end of the day, we all come together and grab hands and try to go get a first down. So I think when all those things fade away and you represent hard work and work ethic, I think that's why Southwest Virginia, that's why people love football. Because I think it's kind of indicative of the whole culture.
Coach, I love it, man. I love that response. This has been an absolute honor. I've learned a ton from this conversation. I look forward to the next time we can sit down and do it all again. Thank you so much for your time today, buddy. Get after Chill Howie.
Yes, sir. I appreciate you having me, man. Have a good one.
That is Galax head football coach Mark Dixon on the Southwest Virginia Sports Podcast.
All right, now we're back from that Coach's Corner interview there with Mark Dixon. Brady, what'd you take away? You said it was one of the most enlightening interviews you had. What did you take away from it?
Just the way he says he wants to run a program, what he took away from George Welsh and what he took away from Jimmy Johnson. And those guys are Hall of Fame football coaches, Ryan, and he got the privilege to play for both of them. He played with Dan Marino. He blocked for Dan Marino. He blocked for Ricky Williams, blocked for Chris Carter catching passes. Played with Zach Thomas, all these guys, Hall of Fame football players, Ryan, some of the best they ever play, and Mark Dixon was right there and with them and on a first-name basis with those guys. But just what he says, how he wants to mold young men is really incredible, and how he prepares and how they prepare in their strength and conditioning program, it's the best in Southwest Virginia. I will go as far to say that he is the best football coach when it comes down to it in Southwest Virginia. Look what he's done at Galax. It's been pretty impressive. Mark Dixon, very generous to give us his time, and I'd really love to hear it again anytime. I loved what he said about Southwest Virginia. He's like, I think this is so special because it doesn't matter our race, our religion, our socioeconomic status. At the end of the day, we can lock arms and we can go out there and get a first down. And if that doesn't make you want to run through a wall, I don't know what the heck does. But Mark Dixon, you the man, the Maroon Tide, always will hold a special place in my heart. Shout out Chandler Quisenberry in 708 Golden Harvest Circle in Blacksburg.
All right, we have some questions to answer this week. Let's see here. Hashtag BBN, our predictions for the state champions in Virginia.
So are we going on all six rankings?
Let's not, because we have no idea about anything that is 4A or 5A. I think you and I both will pick the same team for 4A, so we can do 4A down.
Hey, let's do 4A. I'm going to look up some stuff here just to kind of be weird, but nonetheless, I'm going to look. Class 1, I'm going to go Chill Howie. Class 2, I'm going with Graham. Class 4, I'm going with Blacksburg. Class 3, I'm going to go with Lord Botetourt, Ryan. I really am going to go with Lord Botetourt in Class 3. Class 5, just for giggles, I'm going to go with Highland Springs to do it again. And in Class 6, again, just for giggles, I'm going to go with Ocean Lakes in Man Alive, Ryan. In the Final Four in Class 6, there is one loss amongst all four teams. Just one loss combined.
That's a tough Final Four. I won't do 5 or 6 because I know nothing about those. I'm obviously going to pick Blacksburg in 4A. I hope those guys get it done. You and I obviously had the pleasure to call their games, so we have a soft spot in our hearts for that team. Even though Thad isn't there anymore, still you got used to watching those guys play every Friday or Saturday. So pulling for them. In 3A, I don't know. Is this Phoebus's year to win again?
Is it, who did you say, Phoebus?
Yeah.
It might be Phoebus's year, but
Botetourt's going to be tough.
Botetourt is tough. Harless is another really good football mind. We talked about Dixon, and I've really not fared very successful against Jamie Harless and probably don't really should say a lot of positive things about him because he's kicked my tail so many times, but he's a daggone good football coach.
For 2A, I'm going to take East Rock. I've been saying East Rock since somewhere around week 4, I think was the first time that I said that we're all chasing that team. And then in single A, I'm going to pick Chill Howie. I feel like Chill Howie has what it takes this year, and I'll expand on that a little bit more here when you answer a question here in just a minute. But yeah, I'm going to take Chill Howie as well in Class A. VCATS has several here. Radford beat Appomattox, meaning my plea during last week's picks worked. With this in mind, what else can we use my magical pleas to create?
That's all you.
Well, is there anything you want me to plea for? maybe a win on Saturday.
I mean, other than that, I think I'm sitting pretty right now. I mean, we both need the Hokies to win, so.
And we'll both be there as well.
Yeah, we will. We sure will. But, you know, I don't know if I want your pleas to go toward the Hokies, because some of your former shenanigans involving Hokies and superstitions and powers almost bit us in the hot end last week.
I think Paul Ben Wagner is corrupting you.
I don't know, man. I don't know. I was nervous. We might have not had a podcast this week if the Hoos would have won.
V-Cats also says, not a question, but if Bluefield and Greenville both win this weekend and either Chilhowee, Graham, Radford, or Galax were able to pull it out next week, it will be the first time ever that we've had a state champion come home to Southwest Virginia, Southern West Virginia, and Northeast Tennessee in the same year. That's
very impressive research.
That is impressive research by V-Cats there. He does some good work on Twitter. He wrote my lead for the Graham Richlands preview with the there are three things in life you can count on. You have to pay taxes. You're going to die, and Richlands is going to play football past Thanksgiving. So he came up with that one, so kudos to him. And then his last question, how long until we have Greg Mansfield at Ernie Hicks Stadium? I know these things are usually issued posthumously, but Hicks was still coaching when they named the stadium after him in 57. So how long until we have Greg Mansfield at Ernie Hicks Stadium?
It's a good question, and one that I'm not really sure about, but it's one that I believe will be long overdue, even if it's 1 or 2 days after it's issued, or after he retires, pardon me.
Here's an idea. Since he made the announcement that the plan is for him to return as the head coach for a 23rd season next year, he's one win away from 200. And that win could potentially be against Gate City in week one of next year. Here's an idea. If he wins that game and gets 200, let's have the dedication right then after the game.
Hey, we'll call the AD, who just so happens to be, but da da da.
The issue here
William is, Gregory Mance.
Yeah, that's the issue, is that I don't know that he is going to want all that praise lavished on him, but he deserves it.
As a guy who played for him, he definitely does, and really enjoy getting to spend any time that I do with him. But it's definitely something that will happen, hopefully, in my lifetime.
2-4, 2-8-2, now that the season is over, except for Graham, in 2A, which 2A VHSL playoff team played the toughest schedule and who played the weakest?
Well, the season, we still have 5 teams, man. I don't
right,
know.
Right, but he's talking specifically about 2A. And
All right. Toughest schedule in 2A. I'm going to go with the Blues on that one. And the weakest, I don't know. Who would you go with the weakest? Who is the weakest link?
I mean, is it Graham? They had Bluefield and they had Richlands. I mean, but outside of that, they didn't really play anybody that was tough. You can almost make the same argument for Ridgeview, who really only played Union and Abingdon.
Yeah.
Those are two teams that kind of had weaker schedules, quote unquote. I don't think there's such thing as a weak schedule. At least Graham, in their case, they did play all Class 2 teams. Ridgeview did play several Class 1 teams.
For that and that alone, I'm going to go with the Fighting Brian Jamal Owenses.
He's going to love that you picked his team for that beautiful title. CHS 90, which semifinal matchup is the most intriguing to you?
I don't know if I'd be lying if I said that I think both of us believe it's going to be that Galax and Chilhowee game.
Yeah. Man, I wish I could be there for that one. That is going to be a knockdown, drag-out fight between two teams. I could make cases for both teams to win this game and move on.
Yeah.
So
I mean, both really good teams.
And if you look, but, if you look at Chilhowee, the thing is, if they can get past Galax, I think they're set up against Riverheads. Riverheads, doesn't pass the ball, and Chilhowee has proven this year that you're not going to run against them.
Man, Logan Branson and those guys are lethal. They got rabies, man. They are foaming at the mouth when that run is coming right at them. I really hope Chilhowee can get to that state title game and win. Jeff Robinson is a great guy. You can bet your dollar if they are in the state championship, he will be on here next week. He will be on here the week after. He will be on here every time he wants to be. Great, great dude. Love that guy. Warriors, they're good. CHS 90, hope you're a proud alumni.
He also asked, with the field condition talk going on this year in the playoffs, how do you feel about moving games to different locations? Do you feel that it gives up some of your home field advantage?
Well, in the case of Patrick Henry, which I think is one that you're kind of talking about, I don't think that that hurts home field advantage about anything because you're literally moving it across the railroad tracks. So I think that that's not really been a big difference at all, but it just depends where you move the game. It really does. Now, in the case, let's go across the state line. Mount View had to come from Welch to play at Princeton. I'm not sure how the turnouts were there. I think our colleague Eugene Hilton told us that it was not a big factor, but nonetheless, I think when it's like that, it could give up a little home field advantage, but it just depends where you move the game. It really does, because nonetheless, I mean, if it's somewhere other than home, it's a neutral site.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at Blacksburg, they've played, I believe, every one of their playoff games at Christiansburg High School. And it obviously, that's just a few miles down the road, but it gives up a little bit of your home field advantage. Not that Blacksburg has all that much, because for whatever reason, fans don't come out to their games.
So the four people that come out, they might lose one at cookout on the way to the game, so all three people show up.
I've never understood how a team could be that good and be in a town that big and not fill up your stadium every week. I just don't get it. And we have one last question here. Brady, this is your question that you posed on our Q&A segment. What is it like to know that this isn't the year? Take it away.
Oh, man. It's so great to know that this isn't the year. We've gotten trolled for two freaking weeks about this. This is the year. This is the year. This is the year. Who's over Hokies? Not for 15 years, baby. I was in the first grade last time it happened, and I don't know what happened, but the Lord and Savior above said, not today, Bryce Perkins. Emmanuel Belmar, you take this football, take it with you to Tots, take it with you to Sharkies, even if you might be underage, take it with you and tell them that the Hokies win. In a game that UVA more so lost than that the Hokies won. But I'm happy for 15 years with the Commonwealth Cup.
Here's the real question. If this was supposed to be the year, it's not going to be pretty for the next several years then. Virginia Tech's only going to get better.
Oh, I hope so, because it can't get any worse, man. It really – oh, man, I was so happy. I almost pulled the 70-year-old gentleman down in the row behind me on Friday night when I was just grabbing him and hugging him. Oh, man, I love to win that game. I even said on the podcast last week, if I could pick the Hokies over UVA or Richlands over Graham, I was picking the Hokies over the Hoos every day. Huge win. Huge, huge, huge win.
One problem with Belmar taking that football down to Tots is the fact that as soon as he got up and started to celebrate, he spiked it. So that football went somewhere.
I hope it's at his house now, though, because that's a piece of memorabilia that will go down in the history of the best rivalry in the Commonwealth forever.
This game hurt UVA observers so bad that he texted me and told me he's not even going to watch the bowl game. He's done with football.
Bronco Mendenhall lost the faithful support and judicial supporter of the University of Thomas Jefferson.
That's enough flaming him right now, I guess. Although it does feel great. 15 straight.
Hey, I'm going to tell you, and all this would be unprovoked if we wouldn't have got hammered the last 2 weeks with BS. questions about the year.
Our baby, our streak, getting his driver's license this year.
Probably hitting puberty. Probably needs to make sure that it's got enough deodorant so it don't stink.
All right, Brady. We have some picks to make, and as we've been doing this entire playoff run, we have a guest to bring on the phone, so let's go ahead and get him on the line here.
So with some uncertainty in the air, guys, it is another round of playoff picks, and I'm happy to be back with you both.
Yeah, man, it was a fun week last week. Some prayers were answered. Some prayers were not answered. We'll see what happens this week.
Yeah, Ryan, you made mention after we got off the phone, I guess, last week about my reaction to the Richland pick. I just think it's hilarious. You know, I have a decent knowledge of that football history there, and so I do think it's interesting to see how you guys go with those. Sorry to see the Blues lose, but I was happy that I was correct on that pick.
Yeah, I was also correct in that pick, and after being at the game, it was it was solidified quickly in the second quarter after a few Blues mistakes that Graham was going to come out on top in that one. But the good season in Richlands, and nonetheless, nothing to hang your hats on if you're a Tornado fan. And sounds like Mance is coming back.
There's the big winner for Richlands. You lost the game, but you get your head coach back.
We got three games this week. Let's start for once in the state of Virginia, since we are still in the semifinals over in our side of the state. Ryan, Graham will travel to Radford, their first state semifinal appearance since 2003. How do you see this one going?
Well, when I did the bracket challenge before the playoffs started, I had Graham going to the state final with a win over Appomattox in this game. And so since Radford took out Appomattox, and I'm just going to pick Graham to move to the state final with a win over Radford.
I'm going to pick Graham too, guys. Sounds like Kansas boys got things going pretty early last week, and are really clicking. And I think that even though Radford's had a pretty good run, short, I'll go with the D-men.
Make it three's a party. I'm going to go with the G-men. Nobody's going to stop Cameron Allen. He's pretty impressive no matter which phase of the game you guys see him in, whether it's offense, defense, or special teams. He's pretty well legit. But nonetheless, I'm going with the G-men in this one. So let's go to Class 1. Galax will travel to Chilhowie for a rematch in the state semifinals. Chilhowie waxes the Patrick Henry Rebels there in Chilhowie. But nonetheless, we were told to deliver a message to you, Mr. Dubel, from the head man at Chilhowie, that he liked your pick last week. But they live to play another day, man.
Yeah, Coach Robinson's a good guy, and we've talked back and forth a little bit. And like I said, I talked to a couple of the boys from Patrick Henry last week and told them that I was going to see him in 2 weeks. Unfortunately, that's not going to happen. And I picked with my heart a little more than my head. My head should have told me that Chilhowie was going to win, and they'll live to play another week. Galax is a tough team up front. Chilhowie's been stout defensively. I think that's going to be the fun part of it to watch. And I think Chilhowie will be able to stop the rushing attack of the Maroon Tide and go to Salem next week.
Yeah, I know all about what it's like to pick with your heart instead of your head. I'm really really good at that sometimes. See last week. But as far as Chilhowie, we saw this game last year, and Chilhowie obviously came out on top. The difference this year is that Galax has a much better passing attack this year than they've had really in the last several years. But with that said, I'm not really sure it's going to be enough. Chilhowie's been on a mission to get back to Salem and win that ball game. I'm going to pick Chilhowie here in a very close football game.
I'm also going to go with Chilhowie. I got the pleasure to talk with Mark Dixon earlier in this podcast, guys, and he is a really great guy. I really like what he's doing there in Galax. Phenomenal football guy. Sounds like a phenomenal person, but he's got a tough task against him this Saturday at Chilhowie. Those guys lost to Chilhowie last year, and he said, boys, this Chilhowie team is a lot better than they were last year. I'm going to go with that. they are a lot better. They are the most complete football team I've seen this year. And I've seen Graham, I've seen Ridgeview, I've seen Richlands Union, Patrick Henry. Chill Howie is the most complete team in Southwest Virginia, and they're going to get it done and head to Salem for the second year in a row. Speaking of state championship games, guys, let's head north and go to Wheeling Island Stadium, where the Bluefield Beavers will take on the Fairmont Polar Bears for the second consecutive season. And, Ryan, this was the state title game, as we mentioned, last year, and Bluefield got the better hand that night against Fairmont behind Truck Edwards and Mookie Collier. Those guys have moved on, but it's the same matchup. Two really good football teams are going to take the gridiron for the AA state title.
Yeah, I went back and forth on this one all week in my mind. Part of me thinks that, you know, same rematch, and we've said all year how good Bluefield is. But some part of me maybe thinks that maybe this isn't the year for Bluefield. So I'm gonna pick Fairmont to win this ball game, actually.
Wow. Put Fairmont on the top of the list, the one seed for top nicknames in our area. I didn't realize that they were the Polar Bears. That's pretty cool. But despite the cool name, I think I'm going to go with Bluefield. Their speed and their ability to move the football and score pretty much at will, I think, is going to be what pushes them to a state title this year. So from what I saw in your article, first time they've won back to back, or they will have won back to back. I'm going to pick Bluefield.
You're absolutely right. Appreciate the read of that, but it will be the first time that Bluefield goes back to back in school history if they can get it done against Fairmont. However, that has never been the case for this historic program. It's not been the case for Freddie Simon ever. And like Ryan said, this Fairmont team's pretty solid. I don't think that they've scored less than 30 points. They've not allowed more than 20 points. They put some butt kickings on people, including a 59-0 win over Weir last week. And that's going to solidify it for me. I think the Polar Bears come out, seek revenge. In the second year of that head coach there in Fairmont, they will beat Bluefield at Wheeling Island Stadium and send Juice Edwards and Chandler Cooper and the gang back to Bluefield empty-handed. So, guys,
here I was thinking I was going to be the Lone Ranger on this one, and you have to go steal my thunder.
Yeah, man, I started looking at this when you and I were talking about it on Sunday, and I was like, man, this Fairmont team is legit. The only common opponent these guys had this year was Bridgeport, and it was a very similar contest, both between Fairmont and Bridgeport and then Bluefield and Bridgeport last week. But I do think that Fairmont's going to pull it out, and tough year, tough way to end the year for Bluefield, but that's why they got to play the game, and this one could be a pretty tight contest. But nonetheless, guys, that will be the final time we pick in West Virginia, but the beauty of the Class 2 and Class 1 matchups is we will have a team in Salem, and we will get to do two more games next week, guys, and I'm really looking forward to it.
I'm as well. Heard you guys talking a little bit. We've started watching some basketball, but it's good that we still got a little bit of football here in Southwest Virginia to keep up with. So sorry that your Hokies couldn't pull it out this evening, but we'll regroup and refocus, and I'm sure they'll be fine down the stretch.
As long as they get a win on Saturday at noon against Marshall, my man, I'll be perfectly fine with a loss at State College, Pennsylvania.
All right, there you have it. There's your picks. We have two games to pick next week. Not at least, we know that there are two games to pick next week. We will have a representative in both the Class 1 and Class 2 state final over up in Salem, a game that maybe Brady and I might be going to. I don't know. We haven't talked yet, but I'm considering heading on up to Salem.
Hey, there will definitely be some Coalfield sports coverage in Salem next weekend.
So with that said, I think that's going to do it for us this week. Brady, you wanted to go and do your shout-outs?
Let's shout out Michael Dotson in Buchanan County Sports. That guy doing some great work over there. He's put some good graphics out involving Gabe Fizer's legendary season down there on Slate Creek. Always very supportive of him, very thankful of him and his cause. Love looking at those historical images of Patrick Wade. We talked about prepubescence and the Commonwealth Cup. Good pictures of prepubescent Patrick Wade playing some ball down in Butco. But thank you, Mr. Dotson. You the man. And let's talk about Ryan. It's Christmas time almost. There's snow on the ground outside. So the Madman is turning into Santa really soon, if you haven't heard. Madman in the morning, talking football every Thursday on 97.7 WRIC in Richlands in Tazewell County in that area. If you can't pick it up on the dial, you can pick it up on Facebook at Madman in the Morning. Go like his stuff. Frank Browning, you are the man, brother. The Madman in the Morning football podcast is a platform to support Madman Turns Santa, where Mr. Frank Browning himself will dress up as Santa Claus and deliver Christmas to those who need Christmas, those children out here in the local area. Last year, he provided 18 homes with Christmas. This year, he's trying to do 40, and he can't do it without your help. The website, the address is on the website. He's looking for suggested families. He's looking for donations. He just is looking for help so that this can go on. And this is really a good cause, Ryan. I'm sure you saw the WVVA clip. Not only is Madman helping the kids out, Madman went to Heritage Hall in Tazewell and gave them a concert and gave them some food. And he's just a really good guy, man. He's a really good guy. Perhaps Tazewell's finest citizen ever. Nonetheless, Frank Browning doing a great job. Please support him, guys. I'm going to support him. I'm going to drop a check over to him. It might not be very much, but I'm going to give him a little bit of leeway for Christmas because, and I'm sure, I don't know what this feeling's like. I'm sure that the guy on the other side of the phone knows what it's like, but I'm sure that there is no better feeling on Christmas than seeing a little kid's face light up with the stuff that Santa brought him the night before. And when Santa shows up at your door, I'd love to see what that reaction was like. But support Frank. He's the man. Always going to support Frank. And just work your magic. And if you get in the spirit of giving and you don't know how to reach out to Frank, reach out to myself, reach out to Ryan, reach out to Eugene. And we'll gladly put you in touch.
Absolutely. Couldn't have said it any better. You mentioned it's Christmas. I have one question for you, Brady. How pumped are you for Christmas?
I don't know if I'm as excited as I was last year because, man, there is not a better feeling in the world than mailing in that last exam and you are on the road to come home and not do a daggone thing for weeks. Great feeling. I'm going to miss it. I am going to miss that. Exam week was fun. Like, if you didn't have a lot of exams, you could just take a couple and hang out up there for the week and just, remember what Asher Roth said, man.
I love college.
Hey.
He also said Blunt Cruising, but that's a different song.
Yeah, that is a different song. But I did love college. I can't wait to go back in the fall.
You don't know that for sure yet.
Hey, well, if I'm not, I'm going to be really disappointed in this LSAT score. This might turn into the Ryan Dye podcast if test score wasn't good. Yeah, pray about the LSAT scores. Pray about the Snapchats and pray about stuff.
All right, that's enough of our inside jokes from a basketball season ago. For my co-host Brady Hess, I am Ryan Dye. We'll see you right back here next week where maybe we'll have one state champion and we'll preview two more. Do it, Brady.
See ya. Mama swore she never saw her, 'cause she was born a thief. She stole born a thief.
Mama said, boy, run fast, run as fast as you can. Cause she was born a thief, now she's making me a wanted man.